This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Now, science proposes that absolute structure, and also that the human mind, the thing they call choice, is a structure of no and yes. That it's something like this. Now, your point is part of what you're going to find all the way through the structure of rhyme. You wouldn't have to take your tone roll because I got some of these structure of rhyme things from the tone roll, and that is that part of what the poem is trying to say is that there's not a resemblance that's not a good resemblance, and there's not a disresemblance that isn't a resemblance. And that it's in the interplay of these two that you have any intuition of the music. So once you think they're all the same, you really don't have an intuition of music because they don't exist in this harmony. That's only within this total thing that I do imagine, where everything is in a scale. There are all these things that aren't members of the scale. You're thinking of the tone roll, but now in San Francisco they just did a short composition that was for a piano and electronic tape. Well, that would be one way to explain it. Both of those seem to be of orders close enough that we could think of them in some kind of resembling, at least. But this wasn't what your experience was because you were also looking, and an entirely other scale was happening. And counterpoint to this was a set of instructions and an act that was going on, like crawling under a piano and hitting it with. I mean, you were hearing these sounds. They were just as. Some people thought they're pulling our lights. How can this be? The sounds were ravishing. The scene was comic and yet solemn somehow, because the sounds were being produced by a set of actions that were prescribed by the composers that immediately produced absolutely fantastic movements, such as now you put on a hat and walk around the piano and hit it three times and so forth. Now, this has begun to happen recently, but it came out of the space when they were arranging new kinds of sounds and using all parts of instruments, so that these things are performed by people who really do know all sorts of sounds that are on instruments. The juxtaposition, you see, you had two orders, really. It looked like two scales were coming together that before in concerts, you always listened and you knew you were being distracted from the music. You watched the tick in the violinist's left eye, or if you thought about what color vest he had, or if you thought how can that old man play a violin, your mind was going away from what was happening. But now this new music invests what you are seeing is happening, and this is an event, and the music isn't divorced from it. You don't shut your eyes to the music. You don't grin and giggle. As a matter of fact, the audience wasn't up to it yet because they really ha-ha'd out loud. But I realized the ideal audience would really have a way of laughing that would be like their way of listening. It would be an entirely interior sort of thing. After all, ha-ha-ing while comedy is going on is like clapping at the end of the sonata. You can't bear to have to sat through all that music, so you have to go like this and make noise afterwards. Because if you actually waited and listened, the business is not answering back is unbearable. There are people who can listen to music without clapping. And the experience here was that you suddenly realize laughing also is interfering this way with feeling. Well, these two are entirely different scales. They really seem disappropriate. Just as there's been discourse before in the concert hall, now all those things that were called distractions become part of the composition. Okay, you know, the things that the moment you thought your mind had mopped water from the music, you didn't notice fly on the lady's neck in front of you. Now all of a sudden you're coming into a place where the effort, I mean the person's making an effort to hear the music and see the fly, and the lady, walking on the lady's hat or whatever, or because it's already being proposed on the stage that you see. And they're being proposed not like they are about, and such a one looks ludicrous and the other sounds beautiful, so that you are having to hold two things together that you can only hold when you understand that they're in one composition. Well, this is part of it. So there's a resemblance and disresemblance is coming together now, where before you suddenly realized it was a convention that was separating you from the looking that you knew didn't belong to it, and the sound that was the same all in itself. And there ain't, you know, with music, of course, with the music that was thought of as that. Somehow peeling off an instrument that you weren't really noticing. And it's pure, you know. Well, there was no place for that pure. And probably it happens because it's first picked up a good part of these things on tape, an unseen thing for the first time. And also we've gone through a long period where we put one of those black discs on and music comes peeling off of it. So that we've all been separated from the actual event of music. And we're surprised when we go to a concert that it sounds alive. And then it doesn't sound alive on a high five. I don't know if you have any experience, but I'm still surprised
by
what the music actually was.
Doesn't this derive from the idea of harmonics, that a sound is not merely itself, but it has also echoes of itself above and below the initial sound? And this is the same idea with Church's ideas and with poetry and with music. That what you see and hear in high fidelity on a record set cuts out those associations, those harmonics of the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you hear a piece of music with the woman scratching her head and wiping the fly off her head and the person banging the piano, this is the same idea as the memory associations that the poetry will evolve.
Yes, in the beginning of this talk, I talked about the fact I couldn't correct poems because I did not have recourse to all the things that surrounded me at the time of the poem that actually unknown were writing in the poem.
This leads on almost to the idea of Jung, that there are archetypes that are basic to all human thinking. And that if you allow the woman to scrap the fly as infinity, you will ultimately come back to this archetype, which is closest to the whole.
The thing is that in every in many different fields there are pictures. In psychology, in history, and all the arts, there are different forms of this effort to hold things together that really are that are very difficult to hold together, and even to select things that are difficult to hold together and maintain that they do belong. So that, for instance, the critics who think of Dada as a monstrous joke on people, and when they bring really disparate things together. Don't realize that the essence of Dada was its seriousness. I mean, it was a play, but it was serious. It was thought of as reestablishing, not the numinous, but the reestablishing the thingness in this sense being a real, almost a really haunting quality. And where they succeed, for instance, you don't think of it as funny, you think of it as sometimes as monstrous, but it really does imprint itself, stamp itself in your mind. And those Dadaists thought of themselves as removing our culture entirely by establishing relations that were entirely outside of our regular association. And they brought things together that had been kept discreet and broke through the consistency this music does now, which is also called Dada, because you look at something funny and you hear something beautiful. Or something solemn is presented in terms that you would think of as ludicrous. The Ernst Erlauben sonata of Schwitters is recited in a pedantic, ludicrous German falsetto, and yet by the time it has gone on, it goes on for some 35 to 40 minutes. It's entirely a vocal sound sonata. By the time it has gone on, you've forgotten that this was a pedantic. It is the same voice, and it becomes more and more ludicrous if you were to take that tape and listen to a new section without the accumulation. But it entirely restores itself from a very strange other dimension, and this voice, the term you were originally given to that you were prepared to laugh at, has charmed you. Well, let's open the questions again. By the way, I'm not going to do a very good job of answering about the structure, right? Because I want to write about it the rest of my life and have no answers. All the answers are supposed to be answers that aren't going to come even near stopping this business of asking a question about structure, right? And often I wonder how come this is supposed to be a rhyme when I finish one of these. Sometimes I see, yes, it is. Sometimes these make very overt statements about rhyme, and I take it that they are. and sometimes they even embody something I was thinking about, rhyme. The rhyming of things, now I'm thinking of, or the distance. Because resemblance and disresemblance is only one of the possible meanings, but such as an echo. The echo is another meaning of this embodied in the idea of rhyme. And the eternal return, that's the archetype, is the eternal return in history. That is one of the great poetic themes. Those are both another kind of rhyme. So the next thing I have to a theme, the eternal return. The lion, by the way, is an archetype in this. Recognizably an archetype, it's the sign of Leo, and it is, for instance, it's already in 52 writing about the lion. I proposed it in relation to bestiary. That's not exactly an allegory, you see, because they're explaining the power of the lion, and that rests on the idea that if there was a Christ in the, if there was a king in the human world, who was the king in the beast world, and who was the king in the star world, so forth. And all of that was a way of holding. By the way, all those business about the medieval synthesis, it wasn't some strange feeling. It consisted of the fact that they made all these connections and orders, and they kept them, and when they ceased to keep them, it fell apart, right? But they didn't just cease to keep them. It got complicated by other systems that were introduced, and they couldn't keep two systems together. It always was disrupted by. They kept two systems going all the time: the pagan one, the country one, and the Christian one. And when the Christian one fell to pieces in the 13th century, the pagan one also fell to pieces, and you had witchcraft that emerged in the whole Holocaust of witch burnings that followed. But during the Christian synthesis itself, they were happy with their witches. But the awful thing that happened was coming in contact with the modern world. And also was coming into a very embarrassed contact with the celestial world of the Mongol Empire. At one point, the Pope sent a letter in the 12th century to the Khan, reminding the Khan that he was vicar of heaven. Well, since the Khan was heaven himself, he wrote a very, very smiling letter back, but acknowledging, thanking the Pope for acknowledging his feudal overlordship and saying he certainly was pleased that the vicar was that the Pope was acting as his vicar in Europe, because and both of them were the contact between these different areas and different ideas. Now, but heaven was a term they had in common, a kind of pun. And as these overlapped, but then as they came really closer together and the human community drew together, both them worlds of thought fell apart. And we had to discover new terms at all, put them together. But the Christian certainly, it was of great importance in the Christian world that the lion and man and the stars were all related and correspondences. So one of the things I said about and still do, find new correspondences. Many of them I find, and we can try and keep up with science. Science is a place that's always coming up with new images. And if you don't sooner thought you hit one image, let's say like the role of the light, and suddenly discovered, yes, the light is the thing that causes changes in our spirit and being, and then you find out now just two, I think it is in the last issue of Scientific Monthly, there's a resume of what it is that they've been talking about virus and cancer, and that is that the virus also can change the chromosome structure. Well, but in the 1930s, a French poet by the name of Artaud said, God is no longer light, he is virus. He is virus. And so you get a scary thing for poetry reappearing in science, in which they observe the virus has changed chromosome structures, so not only life, but and I'm scared thinking, the thing of Bartholes is a thing called Have Done with the Judgment of God. It was a radio speech to death. But you're afraid of disease, but you've always been afraid of God. You've been afraid of changing from what you are. All right, let's go back to that.
Do you have any sense of reason that something relates to that?
The what?
About 15?
I think we touched on this in the
right. Robert, number four, page 17, he's the operator.
Charles Olson.
Is that it?
Yes. Now, the stars were already there in Leo and in the Lion, and stars are now increasing, being set by every and any attention everywhere I can find out or find lore or anything about stars at the present time. But this means when you come to the boundaries of the, as this poem is trying to exist on the outbound, and what it says is that, all right, you, Charles Olson, ride out there, and I am here in the center in this field. I'm not an outrider. I'm one of these kin, culverts, feeders, and with the familiar animals and all. And then I say, but I, in the very center at the heart, and actually am a rhyme and a correspondent of yours. Because when I love, and when I create love, as the leaves create from the light from the light, when in something comparable to photosynthesis, I create, I actually practice the practices or chemistries of love, and have my own emotional being, that return. And there's some sense here, I guess, that the light and the leaves return. I don't know how that goes, but this is the reciprocity. All those things return to the remote precincts where the courageous move. Remote return to the very outpost. I had heard previous to this, I guess, when I came back. Like, there's a radio speech of Bertrand Russell in a speech that he made on the BBC in a series about what men, what you really believe. And he tells about, he says that the thing that gave everything or meaning was, or the experience that gave it meaning, was when he really knew, and that was at a time of looking, although he certainly come to that view from his tendency of thought, but I mean when he experienced it, that the light, that there was an event at the point when the light of a star, when he saw a star, that he didn't simply see a star, but this was an event between the light of the star and himself, and that there was a continuity of event that went from himself back to the star. This is the thing that is really staggering to the human being. If there's a continuity from the star to you, and there has to be if you would see the light, and if you want to know the full mystery, everybody seeing that light has such a continuity from the star to them. Then there's a continuity from the eye at the moment of seeing the light back to the star. Because what is the trajectory? What is this? The sight is not taking place only in the eye. It is an event that then goes from some far, far. As a matter of fact, of course, it meant that man's thought had to go to the boundaries of heaven. And as they thought about the stars, and then as they had to go out and find what they, as they had to find their experience, in order to find their experience, in order to make real the experience of just seeing the stars, and in a long time, of course, going to find, they have to go out to find. And because it wasn't thinking, it doesn't take place on a blackboard with the diagrams of an Einstein, because those diagrams of an Einstein are a real living experience that we ourselves are bound in, except we don't undertake the adventure that mankind has to, and we are members of it. And go out to the limits, so that our outrider at the limits of the threshold and stars is undergoing this thing, this exchange of light and man. And I say, I here at the heart, seeing the star, then see you way over there. And between me and you, there's this kind of exchange, although you're one of those really far out guys. Now, Charles himself stepped in here, and I had a great difficulty. I had something that I had not put in here. The way this following paragraph, following that, read, the master of rhyme, time after time, came down the arranged ladders of vision, or ascended the smoke and flame towers, and then I just put a dash, and I put into or out of the language of daily life, husband to one word, wife to the other, breath that leaps forward at the edge of time. And he said, why do you have a blank there? I said, because I meant the opposite of vision, and he said, well, why don't you write that? So it isn't always true that I trust anything. I said, I don't know what it is. He said, you know what everything is? Is that the idea of Inspector Ryan? You know what everything is? I said, no, but then I realized because I'd laid a law on myself that I wasn't going to have an absurdity like the opposite of vision. So he said, put the opposite of vision in there. Actually, this is one thing. When you come, you can't always do it with yourself. But when you have somebody who has a section of poem that you feel is wrong, you have no way of straightening it out. But often, they themselves will supply also the tones, they'll supply the thing that's needed in the composition. When you say, what did you want to say here? Or, and they'll say, oh, I meant, and then they'll say, so, and you say, but you know, what you put in there doesn't even operate in the form of the poem, and what you just said does, and suddenly they put in what they meant. Of course, when you're operating, you've got to keep on what you mean. But here it was, that there are times then, for all of the picture I might give, that I've always got accessible what I want. I don't always obey it, and here I was, this is one of the few cases where the thing, I knew I couldn't stop the poem. I went on, I put the blank in. But the minute I thought of the opposite of vision, I kept thinking, what is it? And of course, I had no answer. So Charles said, well, all right, you don't know what the opposite of vision is. And this is enough. Somebody someday will know. And if you made an error, so what? I mean, if this is a verse, maybe that's the best you could do for what you meant. And maybe you just meant, maybe it was just related to the opposite, and I'll call it an accident. I don't know what the opposite of vision is. Revision, maybe. And then, this is one of the few domestic remarks I make in this book. Thus I said to the source of my happiness, I will return, and that is back to the heart and the home and so forth. That although I am in a sense, so when I said I'm not an outrider, the minute I get all right, though I'm sitting at the heart, I have this trajectory to the soul who's an outrider. Then right there I'm involved, way out there, and so you come to this thing. For this reason, I said, plus my happiness, I will return to that outward star in the moment of your love returns to expand. Now, for instance, sometimes ideas that you've read and ideas that have been expounded can underlie passages that, from the moment of your love eternity expands and you are a mere man, is a reflection of a Provençal belief that Denis Seurat talked about in a book called was in French. It's called The Beyond, L'au-delà, the other world. And in that book, he tells about a village priest in the south of France. He's telling about the unorthodoxy and the remnants of the old Gnostic belief that still were there in his boyhood in the Pyrenees. And this priest told him, because he was curious about religion, a little thing that he knew, and that was that the only event that the beginning of all things and the central event of all time was Christ's birth, and that all history began like ripples, and moved out from that like ripples from a stone dropping in water, and that is why now at 2000 AD we know so much about 2000 BC. And we've got vague ideas about 5,000 BC, he said, but of course we've got vague ideas about 5,000 AD. And the reason they didn't even find dinosaur bones, which are the vaguest way back, was in the very first ripples out from this crisis, because they hadn't even come into existence yet. As a matter of fact, they existed as if nothing really happened before 500 AD. They didn't have to, and so the world was appearing like this instead of appearing like this. So that gave me a figure for saying, although I met you first when I was 30, and that might in a progression make it seem as if all other fallings in love were really preliminary or really not there. Actually, nothing happened to me until I met you and fell in love with you, and then all those past loves and everything else in my life expanded this way, so no matter what happens to me and where I go, this is the central effect. It's part of what's in there. I mean, at least for me, that's what I recognized when I wrote it, because when I wrote for this, that's again me talking. You know, after all, you know, that's yours truly, practically a little bit on part of the poet. And the water, fire, earth, and air, all the simple elements are where guardians are again your archetypes. There's a great deal of trouble between for scientific literalists who feel that water, fire, earth, and air don't exist any longer. They resist very strongly. We know that there are more elements than that, but there are not more archetypes. Well, there are other archetypes, because we now have begun to, with our increased interest in alchemy, we've now begun to make gold and iron and so forth take on poetic, very definite poetic qualities of archetypical qualities. But at the high school level of the table of elements, you've almost lost that sense. Anyway, these are the reason the primal four come there is that they really do hold the domus. The domus is in terms of those four things. Whereas the outrider's got to live in terms of the big universe that Charles likes to live.
I have to.
Yeah.